This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts. This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the worlds of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or stream us live on YouTube and Bloomberg.com.
Well, it is the most read story on the Bloomberg Terminal over the last 8 hours. It's a Bloomberg exclusive. Goldman Sachs embarking on one of its biggest rounds of job cuts ever as it locks in on a plan to eliminate about 3,200 positions just this week. The bank's leadership going deeper than rivals to shed jobs. It's expected to start the process midweek. The total number will not exceed 3,200, according to people with knowledge of the matter. With us now, we've got Bloomberg News finance team leader Sally Bakewell. She's in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio with us. Sally, good to have you with us this afternoon. What does our investing audience need to understand about these job cuts that are going to happen at Goldman Sachs?
I think there are two things. So first of all, Goldman has not been immune to these forces that are impacting all Wall Street banks. They're all trying to contain this slump in profit and revenue owing to tightening monetary conditions, which is slowing down deal activity. And, you know, it's really causing some key Wall Street profit engines to splutter. And we've seen other banks let go of staff. Morgan Stanley, Credit Suisse, Barclays, they've all either fired staff or announced that they plan to do so. But with Goldman, they have some more specific things here. And indeed, they have gone deeper than their rivals in this pullback, at least for now. They're contending with some other things. For example, they made this very costly expansion into consumer banking, which left that unit with deep losses.
This is the Marcus unit at Goldman Sachs.
Exactly. And ultimately, in October, that unit was wrapped into a new business, which they have called Platform Solutions. And as Sridhar reported, this unit is poised to report that it's recorded more than $2 billion in pre-tax losses. So Goldman is facing forces in the market that all Wall Street banks are facing, but it's contending with a few other things. And it also had surging headcount since 2018. And no doubt these cuts have kind of walked back some of that.
Well, that's exactly what I was about to ask about. How much of this is really something that we should be worried about as kind of a canary in the coal mine for some sort of broader macroeconomic outlook when they have that kind of bloated headcount to begin with? I think we're looking at a number here of headcount has jumped 34% since the end of 2018, about 450,000 people as of September 30th. So that's a lot of people.
It is, and those years included the pandemic, of course, where banks tried not to let go of any staff during that incredibly difficult time. And so we started to see that when that period ended and those kind of moratoriums ended, that they have started to let go of people. When we speak to the banks, the message we often get is that this is more normal trimming around the edges, and it's kind of a return to those annual culls that they used to do of underperformers. But I think with Goldman Sachs, owing to these more idiosyncratic things, it's a little bit, you know, that's why they have had to go a little bit further than some of their rivals.
Yeah. So talk about the consumer banking element of this, because, and you know, you mentioned this story, this exclusive by Sri Natarajan. We've talked to him at length about it in the past, but we can't look past the weakness there. And I mean, what some analysts would say is, I don't want to call it a mistake, but it certainly didn't work out the way that Goldman Sachs wanted it to.
That's right. And Solomon, you know, he said that they have been dialing back their ambitions for the consumer banking unit and signaled that they're reviewing other business lines to manage headcount and limit costs. How much we can pinpoint that episode as resulting in these cuts is a bit unclear, and maybe it's stepping too far to do so. And, you know, the bank still plans to continue hiring. As Sri reports, it will hire, including for the regular analyst class later this year. But I think, yeah, Goldman's consumer banking foray, just the difficulty in getting something like that, something so ambitious and huge, up and running, and the kind of regulatory perspective for doing that, the sort of things that come with consumer banking that it needed to have in place were just perhaps a bridge too far.
And what about at the very top when we're talking about David Solomon, James Gorman, those kind of folks? What kind of consequences, or are there any hits that they take?
Ooh, hits that they take from this. No doubt they're getting a lot of questions, and no doubt a lot of senior leadership are pretty unhappy because, of course, the investment bankers are not expecting to get particularly good bonuses this year, and those compensation discussions will happen about a week from now. And again, that is something that is the same across Wall Street. But the consumer banking issue fed into and bled into a lot of the other sort of business lines at banks, and they've ended up kind of having to take a bit of a hit for it. So I'm sure questions are pretty rife right now.
All right, Sally Bakewell, we love it when you join us. Thank you so much for taking the time. Check out Sri Natarajan's story, Goldman to cut about 3,200 jobs this week after a cost review. Again, it's a Bloomberg exclusive. It's among the most read on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovec on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, the forthcoming issue of Bloomberg Business Week, it's the year ahead issue. It's on newsstands later this week. But right now, you can read one of my favorite features that the magazine does each year. It's on the Bloomberg Terminal and at Bloomberg.com/businessweek. The feature is based on tapping into the excellent team of analysts that we have over at Bloomberg Intelligence. That team tracking some 2,000 companies and sectors that range from communications to commodities to finance and food. Now, of those, BI has identified 50 that warrant a closer look this year based on a list of focus ideas. The companies, they run the gamut, Adidas to Vinci, eBay to Porsche, and more. It's also today's big take. We've got with us Bloomberg Businessweek editor Joel Weber and Businessweek Solutions and Strategy senior editor Rebecca Penty. Joel with us in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. Rebecca joining us on the phone from the UK. Joel, I want to start with you and just get an understanding from you how this list comes together, because Bloomberg Intelligence, they follow a couple thousand companies.
Yeah, it's a feat what they do on any given day. And one of the things that we've long done with them is this project, which culminates, it's actually like months in the making, and then culminates with the publication of the list today. We've also gone on and done quarterly installments that we now do. So this is 50 companies to watch for the year, but you'll hear us come back, and ahead of every quarter, we'll tell you companies to watch this quarter. But the 50 is the real deal. And what basically the team of analysts at Bloomberg Intelligence does is take that 2,000-plus companies and push it through Excel sheets, and it spits out just a couple dozen companies that we really want to kind of talk about. And we can't tell you these are buys and sells, that we're not going to do anything that foolish with that much conviction. But
we can look at hindsight as a measure of that.
Yeah,
list,
exactly.
Right?
That's what hindsight's for, right? We call this watch because some of them we expect will outperform, and others might lag. And so it's a great little mix of companies that we just think are going to have interesting years. Rebecca was one of the Business Week editors who worked closely with BI to come up with that list and refine it and turn it into the magic that it is. Rebecca, I'm curious, what was the company that was the one that you liked the most on the list?
Well, I think Disney, and it was interesting. You know, BI has these focus ideas, and they, you know, basically they're high conviction ideas of companies where they think the market is not recognizing something about the company. And so either the market's undervaluing, overvaluing. And Disney was one of them that was really beat up during the pandemic, and, you know, continues to be beat up once recession risk started looming because of all their theme parks. And the thing that was so interesting for me is that BI had this conviction that, you know, Disney is really poised for a rebound due to, you know, restructuring and accelerating a streaming strategy. And we'd already landed on Disney as a company, and then the announcement of Bob Iger's return as CEO. And so that just reinforced the view from BI that this is a company to watch. And I think, you know, the BI's view is that it could be a tale of two halves for Disney, where, you know, the second half is the stronger of the two.
Okay, well, if you're going to talk about Disney, we should talk about Netflix. And Netflix also on the list. Why did Netflix make it in that same conversation, since obviously it's been the dominant streaming video provider?
Yeah, that's true. And I think this is an interesting one where BI zeroing in on Netflix's ad-supported pricing tier. And for the longest time, it's been a company that's dependent on subscriptions, but not advertising. And so BI's view is that the market isn't fully recognizing the additional revenue and sales growth that could come from that advertising, which they see as supporting higher average revenue per user and offsetting cannibalization of subscription revenue from customers downgrading to cheaper plans.
Okay, so worth mentioning that two U.S. companies, perhaps you've heard of them, right?
I have heard of both of those.
The other thing I love about this project, though, Rebecca, is how global it is, right? So in addition to some marquee American names, tell us about ones that people outside of the U.S. might not even heard of.
Yeah. Well, this one was an interesting one for me. I think, you know, we often hear about China being, you know, the world's manufacturing center, but we don't often know the names of the companies that make the stuff that we use. And one of the ones featured here is TSMC. It is the world's largest semiconductor foundry. And, you know, with the recession looming, you know, the economy taking a beating worldwide, chip making is slowing down. But Bloomberg Intelligence view is that TSMC is poised to better weather the cyclical market downturn than its peers because of its dominant industry position.
Yeah, it is a juggernaut, right?
Yeah.
Joel, what about your favorite on this list?
Okay, well, I'll stick with tech. Okay. And I'm gonna say Sonos.
Little speaker company that could.
Yeah. It's truly, as we say in the blurb, it is a David versus Goliath moment. There's a patent case. It's been wrestling with Google for a really long time. As we write, BI is optimistic Sonos will succeed in the dispute, which goes to a jury trial in May. This has been a long time coming. This showdown has been, it's years in the making. Sonos has had its share of some challenges. If you're a Sonos user like I am, there's some software decisions that will make you pull your hair out.
Like that app needs a little bit of work.
Or which app? Because there's multiple apps, actually, in order to use different devices that don't talk to each other always. What, you know, is there more to talk about here? Yes, there is. But so I like this Sonos one. But, you know, that's another American company. We've done tech a little bit now. Rebecca, what's another international company that jumped out to you?
Okay, I'm just looking down the list.
I've got one, which was Porsche.
Okay, you've got one. Go ahead.
Let's talk about Porsche.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I thought, so this company went public this year, VW spin out, which is just also just an incredible IPO. But now they actually have to, like, you know, make some EVs. And autos, I think, are just a really interesting kind of year ahead story. We're seeing, obviously, the pressure on Tesla, and we're going to have more automakers sort of show up and attempt to hit velocity like Tesla's proven what a successful company can look like, and now they have to like wade through some challenges.
Yeah, it's a fantastic list. Go ahead, Rebecca. We have 30 seconds. Yeah.
If I could just throw one quick one back in there.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about companies that are poised to do well on the EV theme. One of them that is maybe poised to fare worse off is Allison Transmission. Another U.S. company, it's a truck transmission supplier. And what you may have heard about EVs is that, you know, it's not just regular cars, it's also trucks. So there's heightened competition in that truck space, which is going to be add some pressure to Allison Transmission.
Well, I think we only talked about 10% of the companies that are on this list. Check it out. It's at Bloomberg.com/businessweek. It's also available on the Bloomberg Terminal. A big thank you to Rebecca Penty. She's Solutions and Strategy Senior Editor for Bloomberg Businessweek, joining us on the phone from the UK this evening for her. Also to Joel Weber, the editor of Bloomberg Businessweek. He's with us right now in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio. Check out Joel on Twitter at Joel Weber Show. Rebecca's there, R. Penty on Twitter. You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week. This is Bloomberg.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovec on Bloomberg Radio.
Brazil's capital of Brasilia recovering today from an insurrection by thousands of supporters of ex-president Jair Bolsonaro, who stormed the country, top government institutions, leaving a trail of destruction and testing the leadership of Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva just a week after he took office. Rioters ransacked Congress, the presidential palace, and the top court in Brasilia on Sunday, hoping to trigger a military intervention. It took hours for security forces to regain control of the main government buildings. Hundreds were arrested throughout the night. Thousands, though, of Bolsonaro supporters remained in the area. For more, we turn now to Julia Leite, Brazil country chief for Bloomberg News. She joins us on the phone from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Julia, good to have you with us this afternoon. Just want to get from you the latest on what we understand about this these insurrectionists yesterday.
Hi, thanks for having me. So Brasilia is in really recovery mode. Police are gathering evidence and really booking thousands of protesters who came back to a military, like they have been camping in front of a military facility about 8 kilometers from where the protest took place. And they walked back there. Thousands of them walked back there after the protest. And today they were removed and taken to police for questioning and booking. And really it's a swath of evidence that police and the ministries now have to go through. Lula, meanwhile, is reasserting his power. He met with the chiefs of Congress, the chiefs of the Supreme Court today, really putting up a united front against these protests and looters, really.
Wow. And Julia, this is coming, of course, as Bolsonaro is, I believe, hospitalized as well. Can you give us a little bit more context on that?
Here in the U.S., right?
Yeah, here in the States.
Yeah, that is right. Bolsonaro flew to Florida right before, at the end of December, right before Lula was inaugurated, which was last Sunday. And he has been really just taking pictures with supporters. There's been videos of him in supermarkets, at KFC. So really just on vacation in Florida. And today we heard that he has been hospitalized, which has been confirmed by his wife. And really, Bolsonaro has been hospitalized many times since he was stabbed in 2018 on the campaign trail. It's usually abdominal problems that he has. So we're monitoring that situation.
And what does that mean in terms of his response? Has he responded to the protests that he's seen, or has he been kind of out of commission here?
He has, although he has been mostly silent since losing the election on October 30th, both skipping public events and on social media, which is where he always had a huge presence, both him and his family. He did tweet last night saying these kinds of riots, these sort of demonstrations are not within the rules of a democracy, and very quickly trying to distance himself from protests because there were immediately allegations that he was, he helped stoke protesters and was behind the exaction. So he was very quick to deny that. So we shall see what happens next with that. The justice minister said that for at the moment he cannot be legally responsible for what happened yesterday, but he did say politically Bolsonaro is unequivocally responsible for some of what happened yesterday.
I think a lot of people, when they first saw images of this, they thought of January 6th here in the United States, and some similarities between the two, Julia. A different part of the conversation, though, has to do with the demands of these insurrectionists. What was the commonality that tied them together, sort of, apart from the idea that Bolsonaro was the one who won the election?
Yeah, I think that's the main thread. They wanted to, they refused to accept the result of the election, and they were asking for the military to intervene and keep, and take Lula out of office. And you're right, the images were very similar to what we saw in the Capitol 2 years ago, almost to the date. One difference that we saw was police initially did not really resist the protesters, unlike in the U.S. So they ran rampant for about 2 hours before reinforcements arrived and really started taking people out of the buildings. But by then, the damage to works of art and really to the building structure was just countless.
Another difference that I noticed was the fact that so many protesters, insurrectionists, were actually arrested immediately. This is not something that happened here in the U.S. What do we know about the people who have been arrested and the consequences that they could face if they do, if they are indeed found guilty?
Yeah, that's right. A lot of people were arrested kind of on the act. I think a couple hundred. The numbers vary depending on the government agency that is commenting on it. But, it was all over social media. People were posting selfies and videos while they were looting the buildings. So it is a trove of evidence that police now has to go through and just keep, finding these people and arresting them, although a lot of videos have been erased, even social media accounts have been wiped. But the Supreme Court last night ordered that the evidence be preserved and really started going after these people, and not just the people who are there, but the people who financed the act. That's been a very key point from all authorities commenting about the aftermath of this, is that they really want to go after the people who bussed thousands of Bolsonaro supporters over the past few days to Brasilia for these protests.
So, Julia, talk to us a little bit about the market reaction here. Damian Sassauer, our Bloomberg Intelligence chief emerging market strategist, kind of said that, look, these are emerging markets. A lot of this geopolitical risk is actually priced in. Bloomberg Economics, on the other hand, saying, look, there could still be a lot of pain. It could shave off 0.7% when it comes to economic activity in the month of January. Is that something the markets are responding to?
So when markets opened, it was really looking like a horrible day, especially considering it was such a risk-on day abroad. So both stocks and the currency were underperforming massively. As the day wore on, things did improve. Both the mood here improved and the risk-on sentiment that we were seeing abroad kind of faded a little bit. So in the end, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. But, Brazilian assets have been underperforming since Lula won the election, really, because investors have begun to worry that his comments on how much he's going to spend and comments from cabinet members that he just appointed about revoking, the labor reform and the pension reform, both of which investors really see as key in keeping government accounts in check, are really weighing on us. So it's a bit longer than just today.
Julia, what are you watching for now? What's the smart question that our investing audience needs to be asking as Brasilia continues to recover from this?
I think there are a few things. One is, will this happen again, right? Authorities say this will never happen again, but there are still thousands of of people in Brasilia. So we really need to be on the watch for a resurgence of violence. And then whatever comes out of these Supreme Court requests and inquiries, there are several arrest warrants that have already been issued. We don't have names yet, but it really could shake things up in politics and in the system, depending on what they find in terms of who financed and who stoked protesters. So I think those are the main things that we're watching for.
All right, Julia Leite, Brazil country chief for Bloomberg News, joining us this afternoon on the phone from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Just to update our audience, if you're just now joining us, we were speaking to Julia about Brasilia, the capital of Brazil, reeling after anti-Lula rioters stormed Congress over the weekend. A big thank you to Julia for taking the time and joining us to bring us the latest from there.
When cyber criminals strike, the difference between a catastrophic event and resilience is preparedness. Finance leaders who plan ahead can thwart the damage posed by ransomware. Yet in a recent EY poll, only 23% of directors expressed confidence in their organization's ability to respond to a ransomware attack. Cyber preparedness is just one facet of the complex risk landscape finance leaders face every day. Now more than ever, it's vital to keep ahead of developments. Cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
It is the Drive to the Close. Tim Stenebeck and Kriti Gupta in for Carol Masser this afternoon. We're just about 17 minutes away from the close of equity trading here on this January 9th, 2023. And we're seeing markets roll over quite a bit. The S&P 500 was as high as higher by as much as 1.42% earlier. Now it's just up, just fractionally, less than 0.1%. Really eager to hear what our next guest has to think of, not just today's trade, but of the outlook for the year. We've got Gina Bolvin with us, president of Bolvin Wealth Management Group. She joins us this afternoon on the phone from Boston. Gina, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, let's talk a little bit about the trade moving forward, because if the theme of last week and the year has been, and it continues, how high will inflation go? Has it indeed peaked? And how high will the federal funds rate have to go in order to tamp down inflation? What's top of mind for you at Bolvin Wealth Management Group?
Oh, well, last week was such a good week for the market. What kicked it off is a jobs report, and there was something for everyone there. And it was surprising to the upside. And we still have that broken record bad news is good news is bad news. A slower wage growth, which helps bring inflation down, was good for investors because it gave investors hope, finally, that the Fed may not have to raise rates as much and as long, and maybe they might even have to cut rates. And there's a glimmer of hope of a soft landing. So that's what happened last week, and we also saw the ISM survey was surprising, where the service industry contracted for the first time in 2.5 years. So we're starting to see that the interest rate hikes are making their way into the economy, and most of the work the Fed had to do to slow the economy may be behind us.
Well, Gina, one of the historical trends that has really kind of thrown me for a loop here is that after midterm elections, people tend to buy in. For the equity market, for a lot of the bulls waiting on the sidelines, I think they were waiting for some sort of gridlock in Washington to come to fruition before hopping back into the market. And we haven't really seen that with the same conviction we've seen it in the past years. Any idea why?
Well, I think that one of the reasons is because we've had 7 interest rate hikes and we've had 40-year inflation highs. So, but I do think that we are going to see it. You know, when you look at history, that is one of the trends that we see, is that after the midterms, no matter who wins, there's an average gain of about 14% in the market. So that is one of the reasons why we think the market this year will be up double digits, 12-15%, but it's just going to take all year to get there.
What's more important to you, technicals like that, the sort of farmer's almanac statistics that you know, look back on over the last, 100 years or so, or what you're actually seeing when it comes to fundamentals?
Well, I think you can't ignore either, right? I mean, the only thing we have to go by is history. But and history is very strong, but when you look at fundamentals, that's strong as well. We've seen, this is the most expected recession we've ever seen or talked about. And because of that, it just may not be as bad as everyone thinks.
Because Because we're preparing for it?
Because we're so prepared for it. Like when you look at the financial services sector, when you look at banks, they've been preparing for a recession. Think of all the stress tests they've had to endure. Think of what happened in the Great Recession of 2009. So the banks are very much prepared for a recession. And, everybody's been talking about this recession that's going to happen. So consumers and businesses, I would say, are somewhat prepared, and they may be more resilient than you think.
Hmm.
Well, more resilient, but I wonder what that then means for perhaps some of the consumption, some of the spending patterns, not necessarily into 2023, but into 2024, when that's, I feel like, what the markets are now pricing in. It's no longer a this year kind of story.
Well, I think when we talk about what's being priced into the market, I think that's what happened Friday, is, the worst case scenario has already been priced in. So if we get any type of good news, like earnings season is starting, taking off Friday with the big banks, if we get any type of good news, the market takes it and runs with it.
Yeah, look at what we saw on Friday. I think that is a perfect way to describe it, with that kind of perfect jobs report that many people saw as being a Goldilocks report. We saw the rally. It's given up a little bit of steam today as the S&P 500 just continues to move lower, down about 0.08%. So, Gina, does that mean that you think markets have bottomed, at least in this cycle?
Well, I think it's really hard to call a bottom. You don't always know where the bottom is until it's over, until it's in hindsight. But I think we have more of an upside than a downside at these levels.
More downside on these levels. You know, it's interesting to me that a lot of people are expecting this turnaround story to happen at the halfway point. The back half of the year is when you're going to see a lot more green on the screen.
Yep.
Gina, why not earlier?
Well, I think we need to get a signal from the Fed, right? The Fed's still very hawkish. And I think that's part of their campaign. It's not what they're doing. It's also what they say. And so, the Fed is on one side, the market's on the other side, and we need to see a little bit of the Fed coming to the middle to meet the market, or acknowledging, because they really haven't yet, they need to acknowledge that inflation is coming down, and they're closer to the end of the rate hikes. And
we don't hear a lot of that from Fed speakers, including the Fed.
That's right. And they're all in unison.
Yeah.
And they're all in unison, and they're all talking the same talk, walking the same walk. And, you know, that's why we think it's going to take longer.
Hey, Gina, just in the last 20 seconds that we have with you, give us a couple areas that you're investing in for 2023. Just got 20 seconds left.
We like financials. We like financials because of, you know, good dividends. And, you know, if there's no recession, they'll do well because of economic activity. If there is a recession, as I mentioned, they're in really good shape.
Right.
They have valuations, and we like healthcare for dividends, and they have a good demographic tailwind.
All right. Gina Bolvin, president of Bolvin Wealth Management Group, liking for 2023, healthcare and financials. Gina joining us this afternoon from Boston. Follow her on Twitter at Gina Bolvin. You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week, and this is Bloomberg Radio. Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or stream us live on YouTube and Bloomberg.com.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.